Strengthen your immune system with Goldman Laboratories liposomal vitamin C and get 10% off. Quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Hello, you're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Yara. Thanks for joining me, everyone. If you would like to connect, feel free to do that on social media platforms. Just look for Wild Eye Adventures, or you can visit www.wildeyeadventures.com for outdoors, bushcraft, survival skills and nature connection. On this week's show, I'm interviewing Peter Birchall, otherwise known as Pete the Pond. Now, I came across Pete and his work via a petition organised to help stop a council from forcing Pete to destroy his life's work. So Pete is an aquatic landscaper. He does services including school talks, university talks, patios and decking, bricklaying and fencing. He's got a passion for ponds and nature connection. Now Pete has been working very hard on his garden, which is like his life's work, and he's made it into a self-sustaining habitat. So loads of species of birds and aquatic life and plant life has flourished in his garden over the years. Pete is a big lover of nature. Now, there's a bit of a dispute going on. I have indeed signed the petition to support Pete. We're going to hear from Pete today about his work, about the campaign. Pete's aquatic nursery contains 180 native and rare plant species, which he has grown himself throughout his life, and they are used for educational and research purposes, and also to grow plants to be put back into other ponds to create biodiversity for the native flora and fauna. Pete's daughter, Kerry, has described Pete's work of building ponds and creating natural habitats as his full-time job and passion. And Pete himself has described it as his complete life, sanctuary, lifetime hobby. It's not a commercial enterprise, as the council has stated and is demanding. And that is pretty much what the dispute is about. So we're going to hear from Pete today on the Environment and Conservation Show. Now, before you listen to the interview with Pete, I would just like to point out that this interview was recorded about 3 months ago. So you're hearing at the time of when Pete was actually going through the dispute with the council, where the fire was brewing and public support was growing. So that's when you're going to hear Pete's story of when he was actually going through the experience. But since then, things have changed. But I'm going to share that news with you towards the end of the interview. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Because when you stop to think what nature's given, don't you think it might be time to give some back?
Thank you very much for joining me, P, on the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
And Pete, when I first came across your story, I came across a petition, right? So on this petition, it said something about Pete's garden and to stop Wealden District Council from forcing you to destroy your life's work. So before we get into that whole story, Pete, let's hear a little bit about yourself and your life's work, please. Just tell the listeners like who you are.
Right. Well, my name's Peter Birchall. I'm been commonly known as Pete the Pond because for the last 20 years of my life, after doing a pond warden course and realizing the importance of ponds in the environment, I started to study ecology and pond life and floras of the ponds and all the life that lives in the pond, all the aquatic fauna of the pond. And over the last 20 years, I started off doing things voluntary, helping to renovate ponds in my local area, and that has just grown and grown to the point where now I run a pond construction and landscaping business, but an eco-friendly one. We do a lot of eco-friendly projects, conservation work, and try our best to improve the biodiversity of the outside environments that we are losing at such a fast rate. And over the last 20 years, that's what I've set up to do. In my garden, I started with one plant. And I'll never forget that one plant was a lesser spearwort. And I had a lesser spearwort plant, and I found I couldn't find it outside in the environment growing naturally in a pond. So I took this one plant and I propagated that one plant. And when I build ponds, I was putting these into different ponds to try and increase the biodiversity. Since then, I now have over 180 species of native aquatic plants in my garden that are in reference trays of eight. This is for people to use and study. This is for myself to use and study. And the reason I have them in a tray of eight is because obviously it's completely organic. So there is creatures that will live on these plants. And if I don't have eight of each species, then they may get completely lost. So if I only had one and it gets eaten by a beetle or an insect, then I'd lose it. So I have to have a tray of eight that I can use. And I also have tubs and small ponds that I grow them in situ as well, so that they are seen where they actually grow and how they grow in the water and in the aquatic environments they actually live. So, and that's what I've gradually built up to have. And the idea was to actually increase that number of species, because most of these are becoming to the point of extinction in the environment. And we need to have them out there and back into the environment. And that's the importance of what I try to do and have been doing.
So is that what inspired you, Peter? You're seeing a habitat decline over your lifetime and you have this space, and that's what inspired you, right? To just use this space to its fullest potential.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I teach in schools and I teach children pond dipping, and I take children out and I do wildlife areas in schools where we built school ponds. And when I first started, it was the fact that you couldn't buy these plants in a nursery. They're not available in a nursery. And a lot of them that were in nurseries were actually had invasive species in that were bad for the environment. So I found that, well, how am I going to put a plant in a pond that you can't buy anywhere? You can't really take from nature because we're losing them anyway. So propagating them and then putting them back into the environment can help increase biodiversity tenfold. And so that's what I basically started to do, was to grow these plants so that the biodiversity of a new pond could be increased. And that biodiversity then can support the balance and the nature around it. And the more you balance that pond and nature is balanced, the greater the input of nature you get and the greater the input of life you get. And the more balance we get overall, the better the whole well-being is for us. And that is really what my ethos was about. And that's what I started to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true, Pete. I mean, with more species of biodiversity, it creates more wildlife coming in, you know, like I've got a few different species of trees in my back garden, more than other back gardens, say, on my road. And I notice how many more birds come to my garden, you know, because there's more trees. And I work in the outdoors, teaching outdoor and environmental education, Pete, so I can really resonate with what you're saying. Like what I've noticed with young people, you know, a lot of them they've lost touch with the natural world because many of them are growing up in urban environments. So they're not having contact to these green spaces, to these habitats, you know, and they're losing touch with it. And something as well that really actually shocked me is the Oxford Children's Dictionary has taken out a few nature words like bramble and nettle and acorn and pinecone, because kids are not using them anymore. And guess what they've replaced them with, right? They replaced them with words like, you know, Wi-Fi, digital, all of these techno words, you know. So what you're doing is very valuable in the world today, sharing this knowledge.
When I went into schools, when I used to go into schools, I mean, I haven't done for a couple of years because I've just been very busy on ponds. I've still got lots of schools that I'm in touch with, and I still got schools I want to be going back to. But when I went into schools, I used to have the ability to take a whole pond to a school. And in that respect, I used to take in frogs, newts, water beetles, snails, plants, everything that came from a pond, because I had them in my back garden. So I could use my back garden for study and actually access creatures like mayflies and dragonfly larvae and water beetles and take all of those into the school. And so children could actually hold, touch, see, feel all these creatures and even the plants as well. So like water mint, they could smell water mint. They could understand that that's a plant you could eat. You can have it in the pond, but you can eat it. You know, watercress that we buy in a supermarket, but it grows naturally and you can eat it. And these things are a lot. I try to get children to understand because they are our future. And if they lose that and lose that knowledge, and the amount of times when I used to go to school and children had never seen a frog, never held a frog, never held a newt, never touched a newt, didn't know what it was. They read the books, they'd seen books maybe, but they hadn't actually seen a live creature. And because we're losing them at such a fast rate, some of these creatures they may never see. You know, the great crested newts, as we all know, are becoming extremely limited and rare in that certain environment. And because they're mostly nocturnal and you have to have a license to hold them and do things with them, I mean, children don't get to see them. When I was a child and a young boy, I would know loads of ponds that we used to go and catch newts by the hundreds, great crested newts by the hundreds. I've seen all those ponds go. I have probably counted somewhere in the region of 100 ponds that I know from my childhood that are now not there. And when I joined the Pond Warden Scheme back in 2000, it was part of the paramount teaching of the Pond Warden Scheme that we were losing in the British Isles 9,000 ponds a year. And that was why the Pond Warden Scheme was set up, was to try and address that and put ponds back into the environment. And obviously, I ended up doing that and ended up running a business that now does that, putting ponds back. And I've done everything from a tiny washing up bowl to a 10-acre lake to put them back into the environment. And in that, increase the biodiversity of that area tenfold. And that is what is important.
We're always led to believe that we're powerless, but it just shows you what you can do with your actions, you know, and you've really created some really positive ripples for, you know, habitat, wildlife and the environment. And you hit something earlier on, Pete, when you were talking about the medicinal plants, you know, and the trees and these species that we have all around us and that we can access like this free medicine, but we've lost touch with it. We've lost touch with these traditions that were used by our ancestors for generations, you know, because it's a different environment. And what kind of bothers me, Pete, I don't know how you feel about this, but there's a lot of false information out there as well. For example, you know, the beautiful dandelion, we're encouraged to believe that's a weed, to kill it. Yes. You know, we've got adverts encouraging us to spray toxic, harmful bee killing chemicals, and it's not even a weed, it's a medicinal plant. It's actually got more nutrition, right, than most standard weeds that we get in the shopping shelves.
Well, I've actually used dandelions to the juice of a dandelion on a warts on my hand, and they've actually got rid of the warts totally naturally by just using the milk of a dandelion stem on a wart. After a while, the warts disappears. I've studied many of the edible side of things and edible foods, and I study edible plants, you know, in our wild anyway, and tried a lot of them, you know, from making stinging nettle soup to, like I say, water mint, to going right through the range, really, brook lime. There is so many plants that we don't use as food and are growing as, you know, out there as food, from aquatic plants like right across the board. And we know that, you know, stinging nettles are very good for butterflies and insects. We know that, but they're also very good for making a good soup and good spinach to eat indoors. And people, like you say, people are losing touch with all this knowledge that is out there and should be out there and should be for people to understand that, you know, don't cut your lawns. Don't dig up the stinging nettles too much, because they are supporting life and could support your life in the fate of food and other things as well. You know, we're hearing now at the moment of all these food banks and everything else. And I sometimes cringe watching, you know, the television and feeling so sorry for people out there that are struggling to find nutritional balanced diets and things when I think, well, I got plants in my garden that they could grow in a bucket and it could give them a supplement of food, but also nutrition and other things. And it's so sad to think that we're losing touch with all this knowledge that we need to have. We need to have, and we need to pass on, and we need to educate and learn from.
You know what, Pete? There's this quote, and it's, be the change you wish to see. I believe it's a Gandhi quote. And I feel like you are, you know, because people who are in touch with the natural world, right, you're going to resonate with this, okay? Because it's just getting, it's bad, it's declining. Like even in the UK, we've got about 2% of ancient woodland left, Pete, and that's irreplaceable habitat. You know, once it's gone, we can't get it back. It doesn't matter how many new saplings you get in the ground. You know, we've got most of our food and our medicines from rainforests. And looking at your story, right, it, you know, if we project it into a bigger picture, we see that, you know, if these habitats are declining and if our livelihoods are a cause for that habitat declining, surely we must find ways to support, you know, wildlife and nature as you are doing with your space. Now, Pete, I want to get a little bit more into, you know, the battle you're facing right now with the council. Can you just please, you know, share your side of the story of what's happening?
Yes, well, my side of the story, it basically started with a complaint from somebody, with a neighbour, somebody, I don't know where, and that was to the council. I had a visit from the council saying that my back garden was a commercial aquatic nursery and I have to clear the whole garden and put it back to a reasonable state, similar to most of the other gardens in the area.
Right. Before you go on, Pete, let me just stop you right there. So a complaint was made and the council just came straight in ordering you. Did they bother to hear your side or?
I was not given a chance to put my side of things that were happening in the garden, you know, with what I had in the garden. They basically wouldn't let me talk, wouldn't let me give my side the argument of why the species are in the garden. I mean, I'm a disabled one-legged person, so I built racks for my plants to go on. So they're at a reasonable height. I can manage and see them without having to bend over, being I've only got my right leg's missing above the knee. And it's very difficult to keep bending over, kneeling down, things like that. So I built racks for them to go on, the plants to go on. And they said those racks were all part of the commercial nursery and that should all be cleared from the garden. And I was not given a chance to to explain that every species here is a different species in every tray and the importance of it. But they wouldn't say that. And I had lots of little arguments with them while out there. In like, I have small pieces of decking board that I do bring back from my work and I then turn them into bird boxes and bug boxes. And to be told by an officer of the council that is classed as builder's waste and it's to go into landfill, I was like shocked and devastated, saying, but I'm going to make it into a useful item. It's going to be made into a bug box and a bird box. How can that be classed as waste when it's going to be reused? And they said, no, you've got to understand that is storage of builder's waste and that must go to landfill. It must be got rid of. It must go in the skip and you must clear it from your garden. And I said, well, I've been doing this for 20 years here. I've lived here for 36 years. And over them 36 years, I've made hundreds of these items with bits of wood, with recycled bits of wood, with recycled bits and pieces. And to be told that I've now got to stop all that and it must all go into landfill is against my ethos. It's against my principle. It's against everything I'm battling to do.
It's not very sustainable, is it? We don't really live in a sustainable mindset of a world right now, P. And, you know, like sometimes it starts from the top down and coming off your story and just sharing, you know, I've been working in the environment and campaigning for many, many years now. And I've noticed that, you know, a lot of the positive changes, they're coming from the ground. They're coming from the people. They're coming from community resilience, from food sovereignty, from habitat preservation. And it's people on the ground and grassroots that are creating these movements. And we don't often to hear about them as well on mainstream media. You know, like we've got a lot of fear-based information coming in our direction. And we never seem to hear about all these positive movements as much as we'd like to.
Yeah. One of the things, another thing in the garden is I use builder's rubble sacks, builder's bags, and I have in those sacks, I have different clays, different soils, compost, horse manure, sands, that when I'm repotting plants, obviously certain plants have to live in certain mediums. And so I pot them up into certain mediums by having this range of mediums that I can call on to use. And to be told, I find very funny and stupid, to be told that all these bags that, okay, I would agree to a neighbour, could look, if they look over the fence, as unsightly. And I don't disagree with that side of it. But they are in bags because they're easy accessible, easy for me to lift. And they said to them, but these are bags of soils and that I use to repot my plants. And they said, no, you don't understand. This is all builder's waste that must be got rid of. And I said, but they are no different than bags of peat that you'd buy from a garden centre. Just they're not in that bag. They're in other bags. They're in, you know, not say carrier bags, but they're in just ordinary sacks, you know, old sacks that I reuse again and again and again and again. And to them, it was, no, this is storage of waste that I cannot have in my garden. So hold on. So I can't pot up my plants with different soils because I can't keep different soils in bags. So how do I keep my soils in bags? So if I go to B&Q and buy 20 grow bags, I can have that in my garden piled 6 foot high, but I can't have bags that are not labeled up with a commercial name that has a variety of soil in, and that I found very annoying and devastating, because they're now saying I've got to clear all those and throw them away. And but
yeah, I mean, I can feel your frustration, Pete. We're limited by a set of rules, and but unfortunately these rules, they're so out of touch with the environment, you know. And many of us, we're in touch with the environment, but these higher powers that be, there seems to be a massive disregard towards the natural world in general in societies, and coming from higher powers, you know, like right now there are tree protectors fighting a train line called HS2 that's ripping through natural beauty, that's cutting through 108 ancient, you know, irreplaceable habitats. Like, we're seeing it all around the world from this story rippling, and it all comes down to the root that, you know, there's a separation from the natural world. I mean, we're almost living as if we're not a part of it or above it.
And that's right.
We might be operating by these man-made laws that are in existence, created, but at the same time, there are these natural laws, right? And they're always going on around us, and we're, you know, humans are nature eternally. So what we're doing to nature, we're doing to ourselves. With that disregard, that's where the people are coming in. Like, when I look at your, you know, you've got a lot of community support behind you, Pete, and that's really
a definite lot. I've touched a lot of people with the fact that I have built so many ponds over so many years, and all my past clients, I try to keep in touch with where I can, and still support their ponds. And a lot of this help has come from these people that have connected to other people, because it's all forward thinking. It's paramount for these people to have what they've got. And the amount of people that I've put a pond in for and are so pleased with it, and they've seen so much life from that, they've seen so much interest from that, and they've, in, you know, their children and grandchildren have enjoyed it, that these are the people that are greatly supporting me, because they realise what I've been doing is good for them and good for the planet. And that is what it's about. I've always believed that we are so symbiotic. We know that we're everything on this planet. And as far as we can see anything in the universe, we are so connected. And we're connected to it all. We're connected to every piece of nature, every piece of it. We're made from the same materials. And we don't seem to get that on board, that we've got to connect to all this life and protect all this life, because the human race seems to be the one that's got the technological advance, the intelligence to do that. And by not doing that, we are only going to destroy ourselves. And which is what we are gradually doing. And, you know, when the last rhino's gone and the last tree's cut down and the last fish in the sea is gone, you know, maybe then we'll realise we can't eat money. We have to have life. And life is what we need and what we have to have.
That's very powerful. And I love that you just quoted the Hopi there, you know, like indigenous people around the world, they are connected to natural environments, you know, and that's where who inspired me, Pete, in my life's journey, you know, like living with indigenous cultures in the rainforest and learning from them, learning about the plants. And in a way, like what you're doing is carrying on these traditions, you know, like learning about these plants that we've lost touch with and teaching them to the children. I once had a kid that didn't know where bacon came from, Pete.
Seriously,
I had to tell him that he thought that bacon came from Tesco, you know, because that's how they've lost touch with where their food comes from. And your teachings and your education, like all this outdoor and environmental education, it brings forth that knowledge. I firmly believe that we need to have this outdoor and environmental education implemented in the national curriculum. What do you think
about that? Definitely. Yeah, this is it. I mean, I've taken lots of children for eco clubs for outside and doing like, you know, planting up vegetables and we do lots of pond dipping and stuff. And I've amount of times I find when I get a new class of children and the first thing is, you know, well, we're going to put some seeds in a pot. So get a handful of that soil. And the first answer is, I can't touch that because I'll get my hands dirty and I'll catch a disease. And I, of course, the being nature of what I am, I would then straight away pick up a ball of mud and say, well, it's not dirty. Look, and I can put it, you know, I put it up to my face. So look, you can't catch a disease from this mud. It's not dirty like that. You know, it's good for you.
Pete, that's what we've been taught, though, through this false information of advertising. You know, it's like it's actually very good for you. It ups your immune system, right, when you kind of touch the earth and connect. Yeah. Even just being outside in a woodland and breathing that air, it helps to boost your immune system. And something that I've noticed during lockdown, Pete, I don't know if you've seen this as well, but... Yeah. People have naturally gravitated towards the natural world during these times.
Yes, definitely.
Also, it's really highlighted like the inequality of green spaces between communities because, you know, not all of us have access to these habitats. Not all of us have access to this wildlife. So if you have a space and you can use it to invite the birds, to invite the butterflies, to invite the bees, I think that's beautiful. And what upsets me, Pete, from seeing your story from the outside is the disregard to the life's work and the education and the ripples you've created throughout your community. And I guess that's what's led to the massive amount of public support which you have behind you at the moment.
I think so. You know, everybody's been locked down in this pandemic and scarily, you know, worried about the tiniest of things being able to kill you, which is what the virus is. The tiniest things, you know, are out there that could potentially give you the most harm. And I think people are, you know, kicking back around the world over all this because we know that the balance has been lost. The balance of life has been lost in so many ways. And like you say, the restrictions of not being able to go to outside spaces and get fresh air and see birds and other creatures. You know, people that have been locked in tower blocks and flats that don't have gardens and just want to get out is, I can wholeheartedly understand. In the first lockdown, I spent the first 12 weeks in my back garden repotting and resorting out these species that I hadn't done for quite a while because I'm very busy. And it was such a joy to be able to do that. And even though I couldn't go out, you know, you're locked down, I stayed at home, it was a way of a release, a fantastic way of release to be able to be out there with nature, connecting with nature. And it's what we need to be doing. And I think one reason for all this support is because people understand that we have lost this connection with nature and we are losing connections with nature and more so our children. And that's important, very important, and very important for our complete well-being. And we need to do more of that.
What would you like to see happen, Pete? If all was to go great, what would you like to see the turnout of this happen?
Well, for my own ends, I would like to be able to keep and increase all the species that I grow in my garden as a study centre and reference library to be able to protect it. Ideally, I would like to be able to carry on putting these plants that I have in my garden into the ponds I create and being able to give them out to other people to put in ponds and put into the wider environment to stop extinction level events happening with our native flora and fauna of the ponds, the aquatic life, what we have around us. That is my ultimate goal, is to have that. And also, obviously, my ambition would be to be able to have my garden used by any botanist, environmentalist, ecologist, or any layperson to come and actually look at a aquatic plant and learn about what they are and how they support different life and how there's bad ones and good ones, because obviously there is invasive species and why is it an invasive species? What damage is that doing and why is that damaging? And why is this a good one and that a bad one? Like you say, like stinging nettles, you know, why are stinging nettles good? Well, you can eat them. Why are they, what do they do? Well, they support red admirals and peacock butterflies and without them we don't have that. You know, blackberries will grow on brambles and you can eat them it's a fast growing plant, but it also can be a weed and there's a reason for it being a weed because it grows very fast and can strangle other plants. So it's basically a knowledge base. It's basically no different than going to a museum, going to a natural history museum or another sort of centre. And I've always maintained I wanted to have this area to be able to see people, to be able to come and see it and learn what lives on aquatic plants, you know, what species live on aquatic plants, so they can see the species and maybe when they go back to their own gardens, they won't dig it up, they won't destroy it, they will realise that little weed that looks like a weed is actually got importance. That little weed is not a weed. It could be a wildflower that supports a butterfly, supports a beetle, supports a creature. So why bother digging it up? Why not just leave it? Why not encourage it? Why not plant more? Why not find how to get others? And I think that would be my ultimate goal, is now this has come more forefront, come and enjoy my garden and learn from it to make your garden better for nature, wildlife, insects, life, general things. Yeah, that's it really.
Thank you so much, Pete, for sharing this knowledge, you know, the knowledge of nature and environment and wildlife, because we really lack it in the world today. And there's people like you and me out there who are trying to share it, but we face obstacles, you know.
Yes.
We're just going to keep following our passion and sharing this knowledge, because that's all you can do, you know. You have to just...
Yeah, yeah. And it's great having... like yourself, you know, the connections I've been building up from this happening to me has been overall fantastic. I've never seen so many people, you know, come back and want to talk to me and things. And I think that is even better because it's going to advance my knowledge. I'm going to meet people like yourself that have got knowledge that I don't know yet. And I'd like to impart my knowledge to some yourself and other people. But I gain from that. I gain knowledge and interest and enjoyment and connections. And I think that is what heals the world and makes the planet not have racism, not have discrimination, not have women hated and stalked and people persecuted and abuse happen. I think it is what we got to understand. We are all one family. We are all one world. We're all one planet. And we need to realize this. And maybe in that we can heal a lot more of what is going on. Why do we have these borders and these hates around the world? We've still got the conflicts around the world in Syria, and I mean, partly due to greed, partly due to misunderstanding and discriminations and things. But why? We are one united people, and there should be no hate. There should be no discrimination. There should be no racism. I will bend over backwards to help anybody and I could, because I have got no bone in my body that dislikes somebody else. So why should I dislike somebody else unless they are outwardly trying to deliberately hurt me for, you know, badly? And usually there's only a very few amount of people in the world that are bad and nasty. Most of us are very enjoyable and loving and want to be loving to people.
Well, humans are born with love, aren't they, Pete? It's just like we are naturally loving creatures. Like you can feed a baby, you can give it food and water and milk and whatever. But if you don't give it love, it will die. You know,
they've done
experiments on this. Like, so we are naturally loving creatures. I believe all this discrimination, it's just something learned along the way. And I thank you so much for sharing your passion for nature and the natural world and humanity on the Environment and Conservation Show, Pete. Is that Lottie in the background, the parrot?
That's Lottie in the background. Yes, she's usually out and about.
I was watching a few of your YouTube videos. You know, again, like that's a beautiful platform there, sharing what you do.
She sits with my cat and she sits with me, and you know, my cat, myself and Lottie sit together sometimes and watching TV in the evening. You know, animals get on. Life, people get on if only people allow it, and we all get on.
We could really learn from that unconditional love, aren't they, animals? And that's how it should be. And on that note, we're going to end on the unconditional love. What a beautiful message to share with the people. Thank you so much again, Pete.
Take care. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
Thank you very much, Pete, for sharing your passion on the Environment and Conservation Show. If you think you are too small to make a difference, then you've never been to bed with a mosquito. That is an African proverb. But never underestimate the power that you can achieve as one individual. Also, never underestimate the power that you can achieve as a community. Creating positive ripples for community, sharing nature connection, teaching about plant life, animal life, teaching about the flora and the fauna, what exists in our outdoor habitats. An education we seem to lack. We need to push more outdoor education, more environmental education. It's rising, it is rising, and that's a fantastic thing. We realize that our brains work better outside. Never underestimate what you can create with a small space, whether it be a back garden, a balcony. Check out things like permaculture, sustainable initiatives that help you develop land space, use it to its fullest potential and advantage. Using less chemicals and more natural ways of growing and producing things without harming the bees. So I mentioned at the start of the interview that this recording, it was recorded about 3 months ago when I first connected with Pete and found out about the campaign. And I am pleased to say since then, Pete has won the campaign, which is fantastic news. And that just goes to show that when people come together, when they unite, when they focus their energy towards the same direction, you can achieve things. And campaigning works. I have campaigned, I've worked as a campaigner for a very long time. If people don't stand up and say, hey, no, this isn't how it should go, this is another way, then things aren't going to change. If it wasn't for organizations like Friends of the Earth, then none of us would be recycling right now. All of those recycling boxes that we all have in our homes now, that was because of campaigning. If people didn't step up and speak out, then nothing would have changed. There's this thing called consumer power. Thank you so much, Pete, for sharing your story on the Environment and Conservation Show. I'm so happy to hear of your success. And thank you so much to everyone out there who supported Pete and this campaign. Power to the people. Spread that positivity because we are stronger together. One love, one race, the human race. If you would like to connect with myself, you can find me on www.wildeyeadventures.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you are interested in being interviewed for the Environment and Conservation Show, do get in touch. Email contact@wildeyeadventures.com. Myself and Yasmin are always interested in connecting with nature-loving people who are involved in environment, sustainability, conservation, reforestation, permaculture, all these amazing initiatives and movements from the ground that are growing, that are spreading, that are helping us evolve into a more sustainable way of being. Do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Wishing you all a wonderful rest of the week. Spread those positive vibes. Make a random stranger smile. Perform a random act of kindness. And I'll catch you next time.